This is Audible.
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away. Random House Audio presents Star Wars, Spectre of the Past, by Timothy Zahn. Read for you by Mark Thompson. Chapter 1. Slowly, silently, its lights a faint glitter of life amid the darkness, the Imperial Star Destroyer Chimera glided through space. Empty space. Oppressively dark space. Long, lonely light years from the nearest of the tiny islands that were the star systems of the galaxy, drifting at the edge of the boundary between the outer rim worlds and the vast regions of territory known as unknown space, at the very edge of the Empire. Or rather, at the edge of the pitiful scraps of what had once been the Empire. Standing beside one of the Chimera's side viewports, Admiral Pellion, supreme commander of the Imperial fleet, gazed out at the emptiness, the weight of all too many years pressing heavily across his shoulders. Too many years, too many battles, too many defeats. Perhaps the Chimera's bridge crew was feeling the weight too. Certainly the sounds of activity going on behind him seemed more muted than usual today. But perhaps it was merely the effect of being out here, so far from anywhere at all. No, of course, that had to be it. The men of the Chimera were the finest the fleet had to offer. They were Imperial officers and crewers, and Imperials didn't give up. There was a tentative footstep at his side.
"Admiral,"
Captain Ardiff said quietly.
"We're ready to begin, sir."
For a moment, Pellion's mind flashed back 10 years, to another very similar moment. Then it had been Pellion and Grand Admiral Thrawn who'd been here on the Chimera's bridge, watching the final test of the prototype cloaking shield Thrawn had recovered from among the Emperor's trophies inside Mount Tantus. Pellion could remember the excitement he'd felt then. Despite his misgivings about the insane Jedi clone, Jeruis Sabaoth, as he watched Thrawn single-handedly breathing new life and vigor back into the Empire. But Mount Tantus was gone, destroyed by agents of the New Republic, and Sabaoth's own madness and treason, and Grand Admiral Thrawn was dead. And the Empire was dying. With an effort, Pellion shook the shadows of the past away. He was an Imperial officer, and Imperials didn't give up.
"Thank you,"
he said to Ardiff.
"At your convenience, Captain."
"Yes, sir."
Ardiff half-turned, gestured to the fighter coordinator in the portside crew pit.
"Signal the attack," he ordered.
The officer acknowledged and gestured in turn to one of his crewers. Pellion turned his attention back to the viewport, just in time to see 8 Sorosub Prey Bird-class starfighters in tight formation roar in from behind them. Cutting tight to the Chimera's command superstructure, they passed over the forward ridgeline, raking it with low-power blaster fire, then split smoothly out in 8 different directions. Corkscrewing out and forward, they kept up their fire until they were out of the Star Destroyer's primary attack zone. Then, curving smoothly around, they swung around and regrouped.
"Admiral,"
Ardiff prompted.
"Let's give them one more pass, Captain,"
Pellion said.
"The more flight data the predictor has to work with, the better it should function."
He caught the eye of one of the crew pit officers.
"Damage report?"
"Minor damage to the forward ridgeline, sir," the officer reported. "1 sensor array knocked out, leaving 5 turbolasers without ranging data."
"Acknowledged."
All theoretical damage, of course. calculated under the assumption that the Preybirds were using full-power capital ship turbolasers. Pelion had always loved war games when he was younger, had relished the chance to play with technique and tactics without the risks of true combat. Somewhere in all those years, the excitement had faded away.
Helm, bring us around 20 degrees to starboard, he ordered. Starboard turbolasers will lay down dispersion fire as they make their next pass.
The Preybirds were back in tight formation now, once again approaching their target. The Chimera's turbolasers opened up as they came, their low-level fire splattering across the Preybirds' overlapping deflector shields. For a few seconds, the opponents traded fire. Then, the Preybirds broke formation again, splitting apart like the fingertips of an opening hand. Twisting over and under the Chimera, they shot past, scrambling for the safety of distance.
Damage report?
Pelion called. 3 starboard turbolaser batteries knocked out, the officer called back. We've also lost 1 tractor beam projector and 2 ion cannon.
Enemy damage?
1 attacker appears to have lost its deflector shields, and 2 others are reading diminished turbolaser capability.
Hardly counts as damage, Ardiff murmured. Of course, the situation here isn't exactly fair. Ships that small and maneuverable would never have the kind of shields or firepower we're crediting them with.
If you want fairness, organize a shockball tournament,
Pelion said acidly.
Don't look for it in warfare.
Ardiff's cheek twitched.
I'm sorry, sir.
Pelion sighed. The finest the Imperial fleet had to offer.
Stand by the cloaking shield, Captain,
he ordered, watching the faint drive glows as the Preybirds regrouped again in the distance.
Activate on my command.
Yes, Admiral.
There was a sudden flare of drive glow, partially eclipsed by the Preybirds themselves, as the enemy kicked into high acceleration.
Here they come,
Pelion said, watching as the single glowing dot rapidly resolved itself into 8 close formation ships.
Lock predictor into fire control. Stand by cloaking shield.
Predictor and cloaking shield standing by,
Ardiff confirmed. Pelion nodded, his full attention on the Preybirds. Nearly to the point where they'd broken formation last time.
Cloaking shield? Now!
And with a brief flicker of bridge lighting, the stars and incoming Preybirds vanished as the cloaking shield plunged the Chimera into total darkness.
Cloaking shield activated and stabilized, Ardiff said.
Helm, come around port side, 30 degrees by 8.
Pelion ordered.
Ahead acceleration point 1. Turbolasers, fire!
Acknowledged, an officer called. Turbolasers all firing!
Pelion took a step closer to the viewport and looked down along the Chimera's sides. The faint blasts of low-level fire were visible, lancing a short distance out from the Star Destroyer and then disappearing as they penetrated the spherical edge of the Star Destroyer's cloaking shield. Blinded by the very device that was now shielding it from its opponent's view, the Chimera was firing wildly in an attempt to destroy those opponents. Or perhaps not quite so wildly. If the predictor worked as well as its designers hoped, perhaps the Empire still had a chance in this war. It was a long time before the Chimera's turbolasers finally ceased fire. Far too long.
Is that it?
He asked Ardiff.
Yes, sir, the other said. 500 shots as pre-programmed.
Pelion nodded.
Deactivate cloaking shield. Let's see how well we did.
There was another flicker from the lights, and the stars were back. Mentally crossing his fingers, Pelion peered out the viewport. For a moment, there was nothing. Then, from starboard, he spotted the approaching drive glows. 7 of them.
Signal from Adversary Commander, Admiral,
the comm officer called.
Target 3 reports receiving a disabling hit and has gone dormant. All other targets have sustained only minimal damage. Requesting orders.
Pelion grimaced. 1. Out of 8 targets, the Chimera had been able to hit exactly 1. And that great feat had required 500 shots to achieve.
So that was that. The wonderful computerized combat predictor, touted by its creators and sponsors as the best approach to practical use of the cloaking shield, had been put to the test. And to be fair, it had probably done better than simple random shooting. But it hadn't done enough better. Not nearly enough.
"Inform adversary commander that the exercise is over,"
Pelion told the comm officer.
"Target 3 may reactivate its systems. All ships are to return to the Chimera. I want the reports filed within the next 2 hours.
"Yes, sir."
"I'm sure they'll be able to improve it, Admiral," Ardiff said at Pelion's side.
"This was just the first field test. Surely they'll be able to improve it."
"How?"
Pelion retorted.
"Train the predictor to be omniscient, or simply teach it how to read our enemy's minds?"
"You only gave it 2 passes to study the target's flight patterns," Ardiff reminded him.
"With more data, it could have better anticipated their movements."
Pelion snorted gently.
"It's a nice theory, Captain. And under certain controlled situations, it might even work. But combat is hardly a controlled situation. There are far too many variables and unknowns, especially considering the hundreds of alien species and combat styles we have to contend with. I knew from the beginning that this predictor idea was probably futile, but it had to be tried."
"Well, then, we just have to go back to Mark Zero,"
Ardiff said.
"Come up with something else. There have to be practical uses for this cloaking shield device."
"Of course there are,"
Pelion agreed heavily.
"Grand Admiral Thrawn devised 3 of them himself. But there's no one left in the Empire with his military genius."
He sighed.
"No, Captain. It's over. It's all over. And we've lost."
For a long moment, the low murmur of background conversation was the only sound on the bridge.
"You can't mean that, Admiral," Ardiff said at last. "And if I may say so, sir, this is not the sort of thing the Supreme Commander of Imperial Forces should be talking about."
"Why not?"
Pelion countered.
"It's obvious to everyone else."
"It most certainly is not, sir,"
Ardiff said stiffly.
"We still hold 8 sectors, over 1,000 inhabited systems. We have the fleet, nearly 200 Star Destroyers strong. We're still very much a force to be reckoned with."
"Are we?"
Pelion asked.
"Are we really?"
"Of course we are," Ardiff insisted. "How else could we be holding our own against the New Republic?"
Pelion shook his head.
"We're holding our own for the simple reason that the New Republic is too busy right now with internal squabbling to bother with us."
"Which works directly to our advantage," Ardiff said. "It's giving us the time we need to reorganize and rearm."
"Rearm?"
Pelion threw him a quizzical frown.
"Have you taken even a cursory look at what we're working with here?"
He gestured out the viewport at the prey birds, disappearing now beneath the edge of the Chimera's hull as they headed for the Star Destroyer's hangar.
"Look at them, Captain. Sorrow sub prey birds. We're reduced to sorrow sub prey birds."
"There's nothing wrong with the prey birds, sir,"
Ardiff said stubbornly.
"They're a quite capable mid-sized starfighter."
"The point is that they're not being manufactured by the Empire,"
Pelion said.
"They're being scrounged from who knows where. Probably some fringe pirate or mercenary gang. And they're being scrounged precisely because we're down to a single major shipyard and it can't keep up with demand for capital ships, let alone starfighters. So tell me how you plan for us to rearm ourselves."
Ardiff looked out the viewport.
"It's still not yet over, sir."
But it was. And down deep, Pelion was sure Ardiff knew it as well as he did. 1,000 systems left, out of an empire that had once spanned 1,000,000. 200 Star Destroyers remaining from a fleet that had once included over 25,000 of them.
and perhaps most telling of all, hundreds of star systems that had once maintained a cautious neutrality were now petitioning the New Republic for membership. They, too, knew that the outcome was no longer uncertain. Grand Admiral Thrawn could perhaps have breathed the remaining sparks into an Imperial victory, but Grand Admiral Thrawn was gone.
"Have the Navigator plot a course for the Bastion system, Captain,"
Pelion said to Ardiff.
"Send transmissions to all the Moffs, instructing them to meet me at Moff Deesera's palace. We'll leave as soon as the prey birds are aboard."
"Yes, Admiral," Ardiff said. "May I tell the Moffs what the meeting is about?"
Pelion looked out the viewport at the distant stars. Stars that the Empire had once called theirs. They'd had so much. And somehow, it had all slipped through their fingers.
"Tell them," he said quietly, "it's time to send an emissary to the New Republic to discuss the terms of our surrender."
Chapter 2. The Millennium Falcon's console gave a final proximity beep, jolting Han Solo out of a light doze.
Uncrossing his arms, he stretched tired muscles and gave the displays a quick look. Almost there.
"Come on, Chewie. Look alive,"
he said, giving the Wookiee beside him a couple of quick slaps with the back of his fingertips. Chewbacca came awake with a jolt, rumbling a question.
"We're here, that's what,"
Han told him, widening his eyes a second to clear them. Getting a grip on the hyperdrive levers, he watched the timer count down.
"Stand by the sublight engines. Here we go."
The counter went to zero, and he eased the levers forward. Outside the Falcon's canopy, the mottled sky of hyperspace turned to star lines, which collapsed into stars, and they were there.
"Right on target,"
he commented, nodding toward the bluish-red planetary half-circle ahead of them. Beside him, Chewbacca growled.
"Yeah, well, it's always crowded around Iphigen,"
Han said, eyeing the hundreds of tiny drive globes moving around the planet like some crazy Multrill dance.
"Main transfer point for this sector, and at least two others. Probably why Puffer set up the meeting for here. You don't start shooting if some of your own stuff might get in the way."
Chewbacca growled in annoyance.
"Well, excuse me,"
Han apologized sarcastically.
"President Gavrasum, then. Didn't know you were such a big fan."
There was a beep from the comm. Slapping a massive hand at the switch, Chewbacca roared out an acknowledgement.
"Hey, Chewie,"
Luke Skywalker's voice came over the speaker.
"You're right on schedule. The Falcon must be running smoothly for a change."
"Nothing broken but the comm switch,"
Han grumbled, throwing a scowl at the Wookiee.
"Chewie just tried to flatten it. Where are you, Luke?"
"Just coming in nightside. What's wrong with Chewie?"
"Nothing much. Small difference of political opinion, that's all."
"Ah, been calling President Gavrasum Puffers again, have you?"
"Now don't you start,"
Han growled, glaring at the comm speaker. Chewbacca rumbled a question.
"Well, for one thing, he never seems to do anything except talk," Han said.
"That's what Calibops are best at. Face it, Han. Words are the tool of the task these days."
I know.
Han said, making a face.
"Leia's been pounding it into me forever."
His voice drifted into an almost unconscious parody of his wife's.
"We're not the Rebel Alliance anymore, with a handful of people running the whole show. We're negotiators and arbitrators, and we're here to help system and sector governments be all nice and friendly to each other."
"Is that really the way Leia put it?"
"So I paraphrased a little."
Han frowned out the Falcon's canopy, glanced back at his displays.
"Is that you in the X-Wing?"
"That's me. Why? You think I've forgotten how to fly one?"
"No. I just thought you usually use one of the Academy's Lambda shuttles these days."
"That's because I'm usually flying with other people," students and such. R2 was with me on Yavin doing some data sifting, so when your call came, we just hopped in the old snub fighter and headed out. What's this all about?
What's it always about at this end of the core? The Diamala and Ishori are at it again.
Luke sighed, a faint hiss on the speaker.
Let me guess. Commerce and resource-sharing dispute?
Close. This time it's shipping security. The Diamala don't like having to rely on local patrol ships when they're coming into Ishori ports. The Ishori, on the other hand, don't want armed Diamala ships coming into their systems.
Sounds typical. Gaverson have any ideas on how to solve this one?
If he did, he didn't mention them. He just called me on Wayland and said to flare it on over here. Help them be all nice and friendly to each other, I guess.
Gaverson asked you to arbitrate?
Han pursed his lips.
Well, not exactly. He kind of thinks Leia's here with us. Look, Luke, I am official liaison to the Independent Shippers Association.
Han reminded him testily.
It's not like I haven't done this sort of thing before. And Leia hasn't had any kind of real vacation in a long time. She and the kids need some time off together. And just for once, I'm not going to let her get dragged away on some stupid diplomatic thing. Especially when she's supposed to be on a leave of absence. She deserves better.
I can't argue with that. It's not like her last few times away from the presidency have been exactly restful. Though, personally, I can't imagine Wayland being very high on anyone's list of resort spots.
You'd be surprised. It's not like when we were tromping through the forest on the way to Mount Tantus. Not with all the Nogri who've settled there.
I'll take your word for it. So what can I do to help?
I've got a plan worked out. You know how Diamala get when they think. All icy calm and unemotional, right? Well, that's kind of like your deep Jedi stuff. So you can go talk to their delegation. The Ishori are just the opposite. They can't discuss anything without getting all worked up and screaming their heads off at each other.
But they don't mean anything by it. It's all hormonal. A fight-or-think response, I think it's called.
Yeah, I know.
Han said, feeling a flicker of annoyance at the lecture. Jedi master or not, Luke still didn't have half of Han's experience in flying around the galaxy and dealing with other species.
Point is, they can shout all they want without bothering a Wookiee any. So Chewie will talk to their group. Then the three of us get together, we come up with a fix, and we're done.
It's an inventive approach, I'll give it that much,
Luke said, his tone thoughtful.
Personally, I'd still rather have Leia here. She's got a genuine gift for conciliation.
All the more reason for us to take this one for her. The way things are going out there, Gaverson and the High Council could have her running around stomping out these scrub fires for the rest of her life.
The New Republic does seem to be having more than its share of growing pains. Maybe it's a normal adjustment to the collapse of Imperial domination.
That or what's left of the Empire is stirring the soup,
Han said with a grimace.
Come on, let's get down there. The sooner we get started, the sooner we can go home.
They put down in the double-sized docking bay that had been cleared for them in the capital city's north spaceport complex. Han and Chewbacca were standing at the foot of the Falcon's landing ramp, talking to a triad of white-maned Diamala, as Luke maneuvered his X-Wing to an only slightly out-of-practice landing. And even before he cut the repulsor lifts, he could sense that there was trouble.
You stay with the ship, R2,
he ordered the droid as he popped the canopy and took off his flight helmet. Keep an eye on things, okay? R2 gave an affirming warble. Dropping his helmet and gloves onto the seat, Luke vaulted lightly over the X-Wing's side to the ground and walked over to the group waiting by the Falcon. The three Diamala, he noted uneasily, were watching him closely, and their expressions did not strike him as particularly friendly.
"Greetings,"
he said, nodding politely as he reached Han's side.
I'm Luke Skywalker. The Diamol standing closest to Han stirred.
We greet you in return, Jedi Master Skywalker,
he said, his voice flat and emotionless, his leathery face unreadable.
But we do not welcome you to this conference.
Luke blinked. He glanced at Han, caught the tightness in the other's face and thoughts, then looked back at the Diamol. I don't understand.
Then I will make it clearer,
the alien said, his left ear twitching once.
We do not wish you to be part of these negotiations. We do not intend to discuss any of this matter with you. We would prefer, in fact, that you leave this system entirely.
Now wait a minute,
Han put in.
This is my friend, all right? I asked him here, and he's come a long way to help.
We do not wish his help.
Well, I wish it, Han shot back. And I'm not going to tell him to leave.
There was a moment of awkward silence. Luke kept his eyes on the Diamala, wondering if he should unilaterally solve the disagreement by simply leaving. If they really didn't want him here... The head Diamol twitched an ear again.
Very well, he said. The Jedi Master may stay, but only as your advisor, to be absent from actual negotiations. The Diamala will not discuss these matters in his presence.
Han grimaced, but he nodded.
If that's the way you want it, fine. Why don't you show us to our quarters and we'll get started?
The Diamol gestured, and one of his companions handed Chewbacca a datapad.
You have been given a suite in the spaceport control complex. The map will show you the way. The Ashori are already assembled in the meeting chamber. We will begin when you are ready.
In unison, the three aliens turned and headed across the landing bay toward one of the stairways leading out.
Well, that was interesting,
Luke said quietly as he watched them go.
Any idea what that was all about?
Yeah, Han said. Well, sort of.
Sort of? What does that mean?
Han threw Luke a sideways look, his expression and thoughts both oddly troubled.
Look, let's just forget it for right now, okay? They don't... well, they don't like you. Just leave it at that.
Luke gazed at the backs of the departing Diamala, watching their shimmering manes fluttering slightly in the breeze. He didn't have to leave it at that, of course. He could stretch out right now with the Force and draw out the necessary knowledge. Surely whatever the problem was had to be some kind of misunderstanding, and he could hardly help clear it up unless he knew what it was. Yes, that was what he should do. And yet... He looked at Han. Han was looking back at him, the troubled expression still on his face, perhaps wondering if Luke would do exactly that. No, as Han had asked, he would let it go. For now. All right, he said.
What's the new strategy?
Chewie and me'll handle the talks,
Han said, turning to face the Wookiee. Even with his expression hidden, there was no mistaking the flicker of quiet relief in his emotional state.
If you don't mind waiting until we're finished, maybe you can help us figure out how to settle the deal.
Sure.
Luke looked in the direction the Diamala had gone.
He said I could be your advisor, so I guess I'll advise.
He looked back to find Han studying his face.
You don't like this, do you?
The older man said. Luke shrugged.
Well, it's not exactly the high point of my day, he conceded. It's always a little embarrassing to offer to help someone and get turned down. But I suppose a little embarrassment never hurt anyone.
Yeah, Han said. Sometimes it even helps.
It was, Luke thought, a rather odd thing to say. But before he could ask about it, Han had stepped to Chewbacca's side and taken the datapad the Diamol had given him.
You figured out where we're supposed to go?
He asked. The Wookiee rumbled an affirmative,
pointing a shaggy finger at the datapad display.
Yeah, okay,
Han said, handing the datapad back.
Lead the way.
He threw Luke a lopsided grin.
There's nothing like a Wookiee to get people to move out of the way.
You realize there's one other possibility, Luke said quietly, as they set off across the docking bay. They may be trying to split us up for some kind of attack. Han shook his head.
I don't think that's it.
I'd still like to keep an eye on your meetings, Luke persisted. I should be able to follow your presence from wherever they put us. That way I can get there right away if you need me.
Just my presence, though, right?
Luke frowned at him. Of course. I wouldn't try to read your mind without permission. You know that.
Yeah,
Han said.
Sure.
As it turned out, it wasn't necessary for Luke to use the Force in order to keep track of the proceedings. Their Iphigenie hosts had somehow learned about the restrictions the Diamala had put on his attendance, and by the time Han and Chewbacca began the negotiations, they had a monitor line set up between Luke's suite and the conference room, allowing him to directly watch the meeting. It took him 2 hours to realize that the talks were getting nowhere. It was another hour before Han came to the same conclusion, or at least was willing to admit it out loud.
They're crazy,
Han growled, tossing a handful of data cards onto a low center table as he and Chewbacca joined Luke in the suite.
The whole bunch of them. Completely crazy.
I wouldn't say crazy, Luke told him. Stiff-faced stubborn, maybe, but not crazy.
Thanks,
Han growled.
That's real helpful.
Chewbacca rumbled a warning.
I am not losing my temper,
Han informed him stiffly.
I am under perfect control.
Luke looked at his friend, carefully hiding a smile. It was like the old Han again, the brashly confident smuggler he and Obi-Wan had first met back in the Mos Eisley cantina. Charging cheerfully into unknown situations, and more often than not, finding himself up to his neck in trouble. It was nice to know that even as a respectable family man and responsible official of the New Republic, Han hadn't lost all of the recklessness that had once driven his friends almost as crazy as it had the Imperials. Up to his neck in trouble was where Han functioned best. Perhaps through sheer habit, it was where he was most comfortable.
All right,
Han said, dropping into a chair across the table from Luke.
Let's think this through. There's gotta be a way out.
How about trying a third-party approach? Luke suggested. Maybe the New Republic could run security for Diamalan freighters when they're in Ashori systems. Chewbacca rumbled the obvious problem. Yes, I know we don't have a lot of ships to spare, Luke said. But the High Council ought to be able to scrounge up something.
Not enough to do any good,
Han said, shaking his head.
The Diamala do an awful lot of shipping, and I don't think you realize how thin our hardware is spread out there.
It would still be cheaper in the long run than whatever it would cost to pull the Diamala and Ashori apart if they start shooting at each other again, Luke argued.
Probably,
Han conceded, toying with one of the data cards.
Problem is, I don't think the Diamala would accept the offer even if we had the ships to spare. I don't think they're ready to trust anyone else with their security.
Not even the New Republic? Luke asked. Han shook his head, his eyes darting surreptitiously to Luke's face for a moment, then just as quickly shifting away.
No.
Luke frowned. In that moment, he'd caught another flicker of the same troubled mood he'd felt back by the Falcon. I see.
Yeah,
Han said, all brisk business again.
Anybody got any other ideas?
Luke glanced at Chewbacca, searching for a diplomatic way to say this, but there really wasn't one. You know, Han, it's not too late to bring Leia in on this. We could call Wayland and ask the Nogri to bring her here.
No,
Han said firmly. Chewbacca growled agreement with Luke.
I said no,
Han repeated, glaring at the Wookiee.
We can handle this ourselves.
There was a trill from the console built into the table. Luke looked at Han, but he was still engaged in a glaring contest with Chewbacca. Reaching out with the Force, he keyed the switch.
Skywalker, he said.
On the hologram pad in the middle of the table, the quarter-sized image of a young Iphigenie appeared. His braided lip beard not quite covering up the throat insignia of the Iphigen Spaceport Directorate.
I apologize for disturbing your deliberations, Jedi Skywalker,
he said, his voice far more melodious than the craggy face and physique would have suggested.
But we've received notification from New Republic Commerce that a Sarkon freighter is on its way here under a customs red alert.
Luke looked at Han. Customs red? A warning that there was illegal and highly dangerous cargo aboard.
Did Commerce identify the captain and crew?
No,
the Iphigenie said.
A follow-up transmission was promised, but it has not yet arrived. The suspect freighter is already approaching Iphigen, and we have dispatched the bulk of our inner system customs frigates and patrol craft to intercept. It was thought that as New Republic representatives, you and Captain Solo might wish to observe the procedure.
There was a sudden change in Han's emotions. Luke looked over to see his friend gazing thoughtfully off into space.
We appreciate the invitation, he said, looking back at the hologram. At the moment, though...
Where's this Sarkon coming in from?
Han interrupted.
Sector 3 Besh.
The Iphigenie's image was replaced by a schematic of Iphigen and the space around it. A red dot blinked a few degrees off a line connecting Iphigen to its sun. Nearly 20 blinking green dots were converging on it from the planet and nearby space.
As you can see, we have attempted to send a force adequate to overcome any resistance.
Yeah,
Han said slowly.
And you're sure it's a Sarkon?
Its transponder ID has been checked,
the Iphigenie told him.
The ship itself is a Corellian Action Kine 12, rarely seen in this part of the core except under Sarkon authority.
Luke whistled soundlessly. He'd been given a tour of an Action Kine 12 once, and had come away thoroughly impressed by both the touches of inner luxury and the multiple tiers of outer weaponry. Designed to transport the most valuable of cargoes, it very nearly qualified as a capital warship, which was probably why the Iphigenies were sending so many ships to intercept it. If its captains decided not to cooperate, the Iphigenies were in for a fight.
Sounds like a Sarkon, all right,
Han agreed, his voice a little bit too casual.
You go ahead and do your intercept. Maybe we'll come up later and have a look.
Thank you, Captain Solo,
the Iphigenie said.
I will alert the officials that you will be joining them. Farewell.
The hologram vanished.
Don't count on it,
Han muttered, gathering up the data cards from where he'd tossed them on the table and thumbing rapidly through them.
Chewie, get over to that console. See if you can pull up a full listing of the traffic pattern out there.
What's going on?
Luke asked, frowning at Han and trying to read his mood. Suddenly, all the earlier frustration was gone, leaving a sort of sly excitement in its place.
You know who the smuggler is?
He's not a smuggler,
Han said. He found the card he was looking for and slid it into his data pad.
You got it, Chewie? Great. Punch it into the hologram pod over here.
Chewbacca growled acknowledgement, and a more complete Iphigen schematic appeared over the table. Han peered at it, then looked down at the data pad in his hand.
Great. Okay, come here and give me a hand with this.
What is it?
Luke asked.
This is the ground station list and the orbit data for their Golan 1 defense platform,
Han told him, waving the data pad as Chewbacca lumbered to his side again.
Let's see.
For a minute, the two huddled close together, peering alternately at the hologram and Han's data pad and conversing in low tones. Luke studied the schematic, watching the color-coded freighters and other ships moving in and out,
and wondering what this was all about.
Okay,
Hans said at last.
That's where they'll come in. So all we need to do is sit somewhere in the middle of that cone and wait.
Great.
Get down to the Falcon and get her ready. I'll be right there.
Chewbacca rumbled an acknowledgement and headed out the door at a fast Wookiee trot.
Do I get to know what's going on?
Luke asked.
Sure,
Hans said, gathering up the data cards and packing them away again.
We've got pirates on the way.
Pirates? Luke blinked. Here?
Sure, why not?
I didn't think pirate gangs operated this far into the core, that's all, Luke said. So the Sarkon is just a feint?
Yeah,
Hans said, getting to his feet.
Only he doesn't know it. It's an old trick. You call an alert on some ship coming in Sunside, then hit a nightside target while customs is busy half a planet away. The only tricky part is making sure the ground and orbit defenses can't get to you. Plus figuring out how to fake the alert in the first place. Come on, let's go.
Shouldn't we alert the Iphigenie first? Luke asked, reaching for the comm.
What for? Hans said. You and Chewie and me ought to be able to handle it.
What, a whole pirate gang?
Sure, why not? The only gangs working this sector are small ones. Two or three ships tops.
Hans' lip twitched.
Actually, you probably won't even need us.
I appreciate your confidence, Luke said icily. But I'd just as soon not take them all on myself, thank you.
Han held up his hands.
Hey, no offense.
None taken.
Luke gestured to the hologram and the patrol ships weaving their net around the incoming Sarkon freighter.
And I still think we ought to call in the Iphigenie.
We can't,
Han said.
The pirates probably have a spotter already here. Any sign of an alert and they'll just call off the raid. We'd end up looking stupid, and Diamalan opinion of the New Republic would sink a little deeper. The High Council will have my hide if that happens.
Luke sighed.
Things were a lot easier when Alliance military activity wasn't always getting tangled up in politics.
Tell me about it,
Hunt growled.
Look, we've got to get going. You in or out?
Luke shrugged.
I'm in, he said, pulling out his comlink. R2?
R2-D2 didn't like it. Not a bit. The words scrolling across the X-Wing's computer display made that very clear indeed.
Oh, come on, R2, Luke chided. We went all the way through a war together, against the most powerful military machine the galaxy has ever seen.
You're not going to tell me you're afraid of a couple of patched-up pirate ships, are you? The droid grunted indignantly.
That's better. Just keep an eye out. We'll be fine.
R2 warbled again, clearly not convinced, and went silent. Luke peered out the X-Wing's canopy, trying to shake away his own collection of nagging doubts. The odd discomfort that kept surfacing in Han's emotions. The unexplained Diamalan refusal to allow him at the negotiations. All of it just added to the strange restlessness that had been simmering and growing in him over the past few weeks. He talked to Leia twice about it, hoping her insight and experience could help him bring the vague glimmerings into sharper focus. But the best she'd been able to do was suggest that it was some kind of subconscious prodding from the Force itself. Something Luke was supposed to do, she hypothesized. Or perhaps something he wasn't supposed to do. At her urging, he'd been spending more time lately in meditation, hoping that immersing himself in the Force would help. So far, though, there had been no results.
Luke!
Han's voice said into his helmet.
Where are you?
Luke shook his thoughts back to the task at hand.
I'm above you and a little to port side, he said. I don't see anything out here that looks like a pirate ship. You?
Not yet. Don't worry. When they get here, you'll know it.
Right.
Turning his head slowly, Luke looked around at the drive glows and running lights of the various freighters.
And then,
suddenly they were there. Only it wasn't just two or three ships. Dropping in from light speed were no fewer than 8 ships, all unmarked, all bristling with turbolaser batteries. Behind Luke came a startled shrill.
"Easy, R2," Luke soothed the droid. "Give me a readout on them."
R2 beeped uncertainly, and a list appeared on Luke's sensor scope. 2 mangled-looking Corellian gunships, an old but impressively big Kaloff battlecruiser with an equally old KDY A4 ion cannon welded awkwardly to its bow, and 5 Corsair-class assault starfighters. The whole group of them were in encirclement formation, closing on a pair of medium transports a few kilometers below and ahead. Transports bearing New Republic insignia.
"Han," Luke called.
"Yeah, I see him. Okay, what do you want to do?"
Luke looked out at the incoming pirates, a sudden tightening sensation in his stomach. There were many options, of course. He could reach out with the Force and damage the ship's control surfaces, crippling them. He might even be able to wrench off whole hull plates or deform the weapons emplacements, tearing them apart with the Force alone. Or he could simply reach inside to the crew's minds, turning them into helpless observers, or even forcing them to surrender. For a Jedi Master with the Force as his ally, there were no limits. No limits at all. And then, abruptly, he stiffened, his breath seeming to freeze in his throat. There in front of him, starkly visible against the blackness of space, he could see the faint images of Emperor Palpatine and Exar Kun, 2 of the greatest focal points of the dark side he'd ever had to face. They were standing there before him, gazing back at him, and laughing.
"Luke?"
Han's voice made him start, and as he did so, the images vanished. But the icy horror stayed behind. Something he wasn't supposed to do.
"Luke! Hey, look alive, pal!"
"I'm here,"
Luke managed. His mouth, he discovered, was suddenly very dry.
You'd better take charge, Han."
"You all right? Can you fly?"
Luke swallowed.
"Yes, I'm fine."
"Sure. Look, you'd better hang back. Chewie and me can handle this."
"No," Luke said. "No, I'm with you. Just tell me what you want me to do."
"Well, if you're sure you're up to it, you can run me some cover. First thing is to take out that ion cannon."
Luke took a deep breath, settling his mind and stretching out to the Force. 2 ships against 8. It was like the old days, when the Rebel Alliance was struggling against the awesome power of the Empire. He hadn't been nearly as strong in the Force then. Hardly strong enough, in fact, to enhance his natural combat and flying abilities. And yet somehow, the memories of those days felt strangely clean. Cleaner than his mind had felt for a long time. Something he wasn't supposed to do.
"All right,"
he told the memories. "Let's call this a test."
"Go ahead," he told Han. "I'm right behind you."
It was unclear in that first minute whether the pirates concentrating on their intended prey had even noticed the old YT-1300 freighter and the X-Wing flying alongside it. It was abundantly clear, though, that a sudden attack from outside their encirclement ring was the last thing they were expecting. The Falcon shot between 2 of the Corsairs without drawing any fire at all until it was well past them. They got a single ineffective turbolaser salvo off before Luke slid in behind them, dropping a proton torpedo each into their drive sections. A brilliant double flash, and they were effectively out of the fight. The X-Wing shot between them, curving up out of the crippled ship's line of fire. The battlecruiser was starting to turn its turrets toward them. There was a sudden warning squeal from behind him.
"I see them, R2, Luke said, throwing the X-Wing into a stomach-twisting spiral out and away from the battlecruiser,
just as 2 of the 3 remaining Corsairs shot past. A burst of light caught the edge of his eye as he turned,
and he twisted back around to see the bow of the battlecruiser flash into shrapnel. Han, you okay?
Sure. I got the ion cannon, but it got a shot off at one of the transports first. Don't know if they're disabled or not. You?
No problems yet, Luke said. His danger sense flickered, and he dropped the X-Wing into another twist as a withering pattern of laser fire cut through the spot he'd just vacated. Swinging up and around, he settled in behind one of the attacking Corsairs. It was a long time since he'd done this kind of thing on any sort of regular basis, but he didn't seem nearly as rusty as he'd feared he would be. These things are better armored than TIE fighters, but they're not nearly as maneuverable. The words were barely out of his mouth when he nearly had to eat them. Abruptly, the Corsair in front of him cut sharply to starboard, twisting out of Luke's line of fire and trying to swing in behind him. Clenching his teeth, Luke matched the maneuver, and for a few seconds, they chased each other around in a tight circle, each trying for a clear shot. Luke won by a single heartbeat, and the Corsair flashed into flame and debris. From his calm came an anxious Wookiee snarl. I'm okay, Chewie, Luke said, stretching out to the Force for calm. That one had been a little too close. You two still all right?
So far. Watch it. They're probably getting mad now.
Luke smiled lopsidedly and took a quick look around. The last two Corsairs were heading full throttle toward him, but he had a few seconds yet before he had to do anything about them. In the near distance, he could see the battlecruiser, firing furiously at the much smaller Falcon skimming like a sting fly across its hull, systematically taking out turbo laser emplacements as it went. To one side, the two gunships were exchanging fire with the New Republic transports, which were clearly better armed than they had first appeared. The rest of the freighter traffic around them was understandably vacating the area just as fast as they could. He frowned, focusing again on the battlecruiser. With his decision to back away from using the full power of the Force against the pirates, much of the confusion and tension in his mind seemed to have cleared away. And now, in that silence, he could sense something strange about the big ship out there. A strangeness he hadn't felt for a long time. R2 shrilled a warning. Right, Luke said, shaking the feeling away. The two Corsairs were coming in fast, the wingmen to port side and slightly behind the leader. Here's the plan, he told the droid. On my signal, run full power to the top starboard engine and to both port side braking vents. After 4 seconds, cut the vents and throw half power to all engines. Got it? The droid whistled acknowledgement. Resting his thumbs on the proton torpedo triggers, Luke watched the Corsair streaking toward him, stretching out through the Force to touch the minds of the two crews, not to control or twist, but merely watching the texture of their thoughts. Holding course, he waited. Now! He called to R2. The droid's warble was swallowed up by the sudden roar of the drive, and a second later, the X-Wing was spinning wildly around its center of mass. Eyes half closed, Luke felt the Force guiding the timing of his shot. And then he was jammed back into his seat as the X-Wing took off on a new trajectory, straightening reluctantly out of its spin. Blinking against his sudden dizziness, Luke looked around for the Corsairs. The gambit had worked. Concentrating on his gander spin, trying to anticipate the direction he would take when he popped out of it, they'd probably never even noticed the incoming proton torpedoes until it was too late.
Luke?
Han's voice came over the comm.
Looks like they're pulling out.
Sternly addressing his rebellious inner ear, Luke brought the X-Wing around again. The battlecruiser was driving for deep space, the two gunships right behind it. One of the gunships, he noted, was showing considerable damage. R2, give me a damage assessment, Luke said, switching his comm control to one of the official New Republic frequencies. Transports, this is New Republic X-Wing AA-589, he said. What's your situation?
Looking a lot better than it was a few minutes ago,
the reply came back promptly.
Thanks for the assist, X-Wing. You or your friend need any help?
R2's damage assessment came up on the computer screen,
No, I'm fine. Han?
No problems here. We'll give you an escort down if you want.
Sounds good to me,
the transport captain said.
Thanks again.
The transports turned back toward Iphigen. Swinging the X-Wing toward their vector, Luke switched back to the private frequency.
Just like old times, he said wryly to Han.
Yeah,
Han said, his voice sounding distracted.
You catch any insignia or markings on any of those ships?
There wasn't anything on the Corsairs, Luke said. I didn't get close enough to the others to see. Why? You think they might not have been pirates?
Oh, they were pirates, all right. Problem is, most pirates like to splash blazing claws or fireballs all over their ships. Try to scare the target into giving up without a fight. Usually the only reason they cover down is if they were working for someone else.
Luke looked out his canopy at the lights of the rest of the freighters around them, slowly and gingerly settling back into a normal traffic pattern again. 100 exotic cargoes from 100 different worlds. And yet the pirates had chosen to hit a pair of New Republic transports.
Privateers, then, he said. Hired by the Empire.
I'd say that's a good bet. I wonder which gang they were.
Or where the Empire's getting the funds to hire them, Luke said slowly.
Stretching out with the Force, he brought back the memory of the odd sensation he'd picked up from the battlecruiser.
I remember Leia telling me what privateers cost, back when the Alliance was hiring them to hit Imperial shipping. They don't come cheap.
Not good ones, anyway. Not that this batch was anything special.
I'm not so sure, Luke said, focusing his full attention on the memories.
It was indeed something he'd felt before. And then, it clicked into place.
I may be wrong, Han, he said, but I think there was a group of clones aboard that battlecruiser.
For a long moment, the comm was silent.
You sure?
The sense was the same one I got when we were chasing Grand Admiral Thrawn's clone warriors around the Katana.
Han hissed thoughtfully into the comm.
Terrific. I wonder where the Empire's been hiding clones for the past 10 years. I thought they'd pretty much thrown all of them at us already.
I thought so, too. Maybe they've got a new cloning facility going.
Oh, that's a cheerful thought. Look, let's take care of one crisis at a time. We'll finish up here and then turn intelligence loose on it.
I was under the impression that intelligence wasn't having much luck pinning down these gangs.
They're not. Neither are my contacts with the independent shippers.
Sounds like we need someone better connected with the Fringe, Luke hesitated. Someone like Talon Card, for example.
There was a brief silence from the other end.
You didn't say that like you meant it. Trouble?
No, not really, Luke said, wishing now he'd kept quiet. It's just...
No, nothing.
Let me guess. Mara...
Luke grimaced.
It's nothing, Han, okay? Just let it go.
Sure. No problem. As soon as we finish up here, you can go back to Yavin and forget about it. Chewie and me can get word to Card, okay?
Okay. Thanks.
No problem. Let's go talk to the Diamala some more. See if any of this might have changed their attitude toward New Republic protection.
We can try. Han, what is it about me the Diamala don't like? I really need to know.
There was a short pause.
Well, to put it in a spray shell, they don't trust you.
Why not?
Because you're too powerful. At least according to them. They claim that Jedi who use as much power as you do always end up slipping over to the dark side.
An unpleasant sensation settled into the pit of Luke's stomach.
You think they're right?
Hey, Luke, I don't know about any of that stuff. I've seen you do some pretty wild things, and I'll admit it sometimes worries me a little. But if you say you've got it under control, hey, that's good enough for me. You sure weren't getting all flashy out here just now?
No, I wasn't.